What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My mind's playing tricks on me. Why won't it let me be? Look inside and try to find, but nothing seems to give me sweet relief.
It's Self-Helpless with Kelsey Cook, Delaney Fisher, and Taylor Tomlinson.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Self-Helpless. I'm Delaney Fisher.
I'm Taylor Tomlinson.
And I'm Kelsey Cook.
And oh my gosh, we are so excited about this episode. We've been waiting a long time for this lovely guest. She's a death doula, attorney, adjunct professor, ordained minister, and the founder and CEO of a company called Going With Grace, which is an end-of-life support company. Please welcome to the show, Alua Arthur, everybody.
Woo!
Yeah!
Oh my god, okay,
first of all, do you have a favorite quote or a least favorite quote to kick off the show?
I have a favorite quote, but I think it's really cliche.
Okay,
well, it's okay. You're so basic.
It is, respond to every call that excites your spirit.
That's a great one. Not basic.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. We've got a lot of quotes.
Scoot a little bit closer to the mic if you don't mind. Perfect. Yeah. There you go.
Beautiful.
You can also like push it a little closer to you. There.
Can you say that quote one more time?
Sure. Respond to every call that excites your spirit by Rumi.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Absolutely. Yeah. That's just putting everything so simply. Just do what you love, people.
Yeah.
Right?
Can't lose that way.
Cannot.
You cannot go wrong.
I love that.
Oh, I really love that too.
I love that. Mm-hmm. So I know we have so many questions for you. So why don't you just kick off and tell us, like, how did you get into this industry?
I was responding to the calls that excite my spirit.
Okay. So what was bringing it back already? What was the first call that excited your spirit about, I guess, death?
Well, I went to Cuba. That was the first call.
Okay.
And when was this?
About 6 years ago.
Okay.
I got really curious about Cuba one day and so bought a ticket. I was on a leave of absence from work, which was my legal job. I was working at Legal Aid. And so I took off, went to Cuba, had partially a terrible time because I was terribly depressed during that time and was really trying to like go out there and prove something to myself. Like, I can do this. I can be on this trip by myself. I'll be fine. Everybody was worried, but I made it.
Yeah.
And then I met a woman on a bus who had uterine cancer. And she was 36 and was traveling on a trip to see the top six places in the world she wanted to see before she died. And Cuba was one of them.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And we started talking about life. And then I started asking her about her death because I was like, is this gonna kill you? Or
yeah.
And it was the first real conversation she'd had about her mortality. And it was really the first real conversation I had had about mortality. And I was like, why are we not talking about this? You know, looking around the bus, everybody who's sitting here is going to die. Yeah. Everybody outside is going to die. Yeah. Like, why are we acting like this thing isn't happening and isn't going to happen?
Yeah.
So that was it. I
Wow. Cuba.
So that one conversation, what was the next step for you? Because you said you were working at a legal job. Did you go home and quit your job? Did you ease into it? How did that all work?
I was already on a leave of absence from my job, so I just never went back.
Okay.
Wow.
Yes. That's a way to do it.
Right? Peace out.
No plan. I'm out.
Whoa. So did you have any experience with like end of life support? Did you start studying? What was that first, like, I guess, death job that you had?
The first one was immersing myself in the field as much as possible.
Okay.
Because in talking to her about her illness, she had a therapist who was working with her, but he was working with her about living with disease. He wasn't working with her about dying.
Okay.
And I thought, well, shouldn't the therapists that are part of oncology programs also be talking about death, right?
Yeah.
And so let's make that thing happen if there isn't already. So I found a school. I applied to be a therapist. I got into a bunch of them, but it wasn't like a strong yes. It wasn't exciting my spirit.
Yeah.
And so I said no and started reading. I read everything I could get my hands on for probably about 6 months, 7 months or so, read everything and just waited. It also helped that I'd met a guy and we'd started traveling the world together. Sitting in that Paris and Italy reading death books. While we went to work. So hard. So I had plenty of time just to delve into death, and I did it as fully as possible. And then somewhere along the line, my brother-in-law got sick, my older sister's husband. He had Burkitt's lymphoma, and between diagnosis and death was only 6 months. After about 4 months, we learned that there wasn't going to be anything else that they could do to treat him, and I packed up all my bags, and I went to New York where they were, and I spent the next 2 months with them, basically doulaing him without knowing it, right? Like,
wow.
I was supporting my sister so she could be at the hospital. I was with my niece a lot, picking her up from school. I was figuring out medication and doing research. What do we do about Ernst? What do we do about his will? Like, what do we do about his stuff? You know, I was doing all that.
Yeah.
The stuff that I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Can I ask real quickly, can you define what a doula is? Because I know that like my cousin is one for birth, and I didn't realize that there was also like a death doula too. But can you describe what that means?
It's all the non-medical care and support of the dying person and the family through the process.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. And for a lot of us, it's also afterward. Like, I help people when they are healthy and they've started to think about the fact that one day they're going to die. I help them put together a very comprehensive end-of-life plan.
Mm.
So here's how to handle all of my affairs when that time comes.
Okay.
And then when people know what it is that they're going to be dying of, like there's a disease and they probably can't treat it anymore, I help them kind of craft the dying experience that would be most peaceful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it's all a crapshoot, like we don't know, but in talking about it, there's a lot of value to be gained. And then after a death, I help family members wrap up the affairs.
Oh, wow.
So it's all things death.
Wow.
All the time.
Do people ever bring you in just for after death part? Are you kind of usually, okay, so it's kind of, you can either be there from kind of start to finish as they're dying, or sometimes it's just handling like the aftercare.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I was thinking like, sort of like hospice, but hospice doesn't do the after part. I mean, they have programs.
That's the medical
for
stuff though, right?
Therapy, yeah, I think. But yeah, it's more like clinical.
Yeah.
Then this sounds more personal.
So hospice they have a social worker and like a chaplain and bereavement counselors. They have folks that can do all this stuff. But realistically, you know, they provide service, right? They can't be available 24 hours a day. And I can be there if somebody needs me to. Like, I get calls in the middle of the night asking whether or not they can touch their loved one who's dying. And I'm like, yes, please touch them. Please touch them.
Wow.
I know, right?
So I have so many questions. I mean, so I watched some of your videos and I could not believe how you're just so approachable and like, I didn't know death could be like, oh, this is like kind of sexy. I don't know. You just make it so like approachable and okay to talk about.
Yeah.
And I haven't really been around somebody who has that ability. Getting into this industry, are you afraid of death? Has it eased any anxiety about death, or has it like brought it to the forefront completely where it's, you know, most of what you think about?
The fun thing about fear is if you're looking at it constantly, it starts to erode. Yeah. Right. Mm. And so I, of course, I have my own discomfort. I have my own concerns around my death. I still do. I try often to think about the things that I would regret if I died today and use that as kind of like a guidepost for making my decisions.
Wow.
You know, but I still have many concerns about my death. I'm not quite afraid. I'm embracing of it.
Yeah.
Yet I'm still like, oh God, please not before I see this guy.
Yes. Right. Well, we've all talked about on this podcast before that we're all super scared of death, I think. Like, and it stresses us out to think about it. And even just sitting here for the last 10 minutes with you, just talking about it so matter-of-factly, and just like, yeah, we're all going to die. I'm like, I already kind of feel better about this, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
Like, we're just like talking about it. And usually you're just like, oh, it's really scary. And everyone's like, yeah, let's just go to Dairy Queen. Can we just go?
Can we just enjoy?
Yeah,
you really have an incredible ability to just kind of put people at ease, like, especially with such, you know, terrifying topic.
Yeah.
And just like, well, yeah.
I think, like, a lot of where my fear lies is what happens afterward and that, like, we don't know. And just that not knowing of, like, is it just darkness forever and like all we really have are these moments, or is there reincarnation? Like, that's where I start to really freak out and panic, as if I focus too much on like the after of it all. Do you have like, do you have your own theories? Do you have things that you say to like comfort people in that?
I do have my own theories, but I try not to share them too much.
Right. I know, it's such a personal thing. And
Well, not because of that. Like, I talk about all my personal business all the time.
Okay.
But rather that it just doesn't create space for other people to have their beliefs, you know? Because if they differ than mine, then you're like, well, I can't talk to her about going to meet Allah if she thinks that.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
Makes sense for your business.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
And also just, like, I want to be in the space where people can share freely what they believe.
Absolutely.
Most of the time, when people are thinking about fear of death and fear of the or concerns about the afterlife, it's because your belief system isn't yet nailed down, right?
Yeah, and I don't really have that, one.
Well, that's probably why.
Yeah.
The fear exists.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is that we just don't know. That's a big fat question mark.
Right.
For everybody. Like, even those of us that have a strong belief system, we don't know. Nobody's ever been all the way there to come all the way back to tell us what happens.
Exactly.
Until it's
tested. Except for that kid who wrote that book.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Mommy, I Saw Heaven or something.
Oh, yeah.
There's some book about that. Yeah.
It's probably people. Yeah, there are those stories. People who have, like, the near death or who, like, go into coma or whatever and then come out. But, yeah, I guess that's as
close as
we can get.
And say, no, that's just the brain dying.
That's your dream.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, like,
and it's a near death experience.
Right.
It's not death.
Yes.
Like, you go, you don't come back. That's kind of what happens with the death.
Right. Yeah.
But so often when people have a fear about the afterlife or concern about the afterlife, it's a lot, most of the time it's related to your fears of the unknown or where you are uncomfortable with things that you can't know.
Mm. Yeah, big control freak. Don't like not knowing. And don't like not having an ability to change any amount of that information. Like, I can't do any research to find out what happens when you die, because we just, you keep hitting a wall. Like, you can't know.
Yeah.
Right. Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Were you born with strong beliefs, or did you find them later on? Because I'm still, like, trying to figure out exactly what I believe. I have a pretty clear, you know, idea for me, but is that something that you kind of did your own research, or just, like, a feeling?
Yeah, feel it out.
Yeah,
I'm feeling it out. I was born into a super Christian family. My parents are both evangelical ministers. Like, I have two preachers for parents.
Wow.
Bless them.
Literally.
Yeah. Right? Bless everybody. Bless everybody. But in growing up, I mean, I veered away really early and have been pretty far away. And it's caused some contention. But, you know, I believe what I believe and I do what I do. And really, when we're talking about death, ideas about religion come into really sharp focus.
Totally.
And so my parents have had to back up and kind of let me do my thing because my thing is different than their thing.
That's a really good way to put it, come into really sharp focus. That's like such a beautiful, like, exactly what happens.
Do you find people who have very like strict fixed religious beliefs are more accepting of death, or is it kind of across the board, sort of, you know, you can't really know how someone's going to react?
The latter. It's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people that are even really religious start to question. And then they start to get into like a gray zone, you know, like, well, maybe there's something there, but maybe there isn't. Or what if my beliefs are wrong? That's one fear that I hear all the time. What if this thing that I've been going to church every Sunday for the past 45 years, if I get there and there is nothing, then what? I'm like, that's a big one. Right?
I can't imagine being at that moment for somebody. And you're there. And you're there to like talk them through it. So what do you say to them when they're questioning everything?
That it's totally normal.
Yeah.
I think that's what most of us want to hear a lot of the time anyway. This is totally normal. And that makes sense that you'd be uncomfortable or scared or curious. Like, we don't know. And now you're at the place where you're going to find out much sooner than I am. So if you find out, if you could send me some clues, I'd really appreciate it. I'll send them to you.
Email them.
But do you feel like it's beneficial to decide how you feel about what happens afterward?
Not necessarily. I think it's important to stay in the question across the board.
And just accept that you are never going to know.
That we won't know.
Yeah.
That's how our relationship with control and our relationship with the unknown becomes a more lax one. As if it's just like, well, I don't know. And how can I relate to the things that I just don't know? I mean, because it's helpful for life also. You know, for living. One of the things I love about thinking about death consistently is that it informs the way that we live all the time, if we choose it. If we choose it.
One thing you said on your video that really struck me was that you're, because you're passionate about life, that's why you're in death or something. Something, I don't know, I could be messing up your words a little bit. But you work in death because you're passionate about life. Can you expand on what that means for you?
So death puts everything else into context, again, into really sharp focus. Because when we're talking about dying, we're talking about not living anymore, which means that I want to do my best to suck all the juice out of this experience that I have right now. Because at some point, it will be no more. Like, I'm not going to be able to be in a body to smell things, to taste things, to look somebody in the eye. I want to be able to do that as much as possible while I'm here. And that working in death really, it strengthens my relationship with living. It makes me appreciate this, like, super silly, weird ride we're all on together that much more. It's so fragile.
Oh, my gosh. When she talks today, it just makes me want to go, like, sit on the beach and watch the sunset and, like, eat croissants.
More of that.
Just, like, I'm just going to do everything.
But that's such an interesting way to put it, that it's actually beneficial to think about death.
Absolutely.
It's beneficial because it's a constant reminder that you really have to live in the moment. And most people just want to push it away and just, like, you know, whether it's eat their feelings or drink their feelings or whatever they're doing to avoid feeling that, you know, that fear. I think it's such an interesting perspective now. Like, you do. It's okay to think about it, and you should.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
This doctor named B.J. Miller has a quote, "Life is precious because it ends."
That's a great quote.
Right? Just kind of encapsulates it all.
Right. If it went on forever, nothing would really mean anything.
No.
And you probably wouldn't get to work on anything that you wanted to accomplish because, I got a couple centuries. I'll do it in 300 years, right? Yeah.
Imagine, like, your 467th birthday. It's so boring. Lee, how much longer are we going to do this?
It's, like, hard to stay driven for me sometimes when I think too much about death, I think, because I go, like, well, then I should just be in the moment every day. I should just, again, like, be at the beach every day. I should just be hugging my family all the time, you know? So I feel like you almost have to find a healthy middle ground of, like, appreciating everything, but also planning for the future that you hope to have while still being like, okay, I'm going to enjoy every step of the process because It yeah. could be lights out at any second.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about on the podcast that one of our other guests' least favorite quotes was live every day like it's your last.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if you really, truly did do that, you would not have a functional life.
Exactly.
Be high on crack, you know, yeah. jumping out of a plane. yeah. And it's just not practical. So, yeah, I do think finding that middle ground, like having that awareness that it is finite, this life, but
sure.
to really appreciate each day.
Do you think people should be like limited in how much they're thinking about death every day? Like, what's a healthy amount? A good 30 minutes after lunch and then call it a night? Like, what do you, is there, I mean, or should it kind of always be in the forefront, you think?
I think if we walk around with it like a backpack.
Yeah.
Or like a good friend, it's useful.
Yeah.
Because it does bring things into focus. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, rather than just want to sit on the beach and drink Mai Tais, I also want to produce things. I also want to give. Yeah. I want to be in service. I want to, you know, do the fun things for myself. Yeah. But my fun thing is my work.
Right.
So that helps.
Yeah.
That it makes me want to produce. It makes me want to get out there. It doesn't just make me want to sit and like stare at my niece or bunny.
Maybe for a good 10 minutes. Yeah.
And then I'm over.
Do you ever get depressed being around death? I have friends who are, they work in like nursing and stuff, and they have to be around terminally ill people, and they watch people pass away often. And for them, it's a very depressing job, and it is very bleak, but you seem to kind of like have almost like a higher tolerance for it, and it doesn't seem, I mean, unless it does, that's why I guess I'm asking you, how do you feel around it?
I get sad sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get sad when I see a lot of suffering, but particularly when that suffering can be avoided, you know, because pain we can't really do too much about. I mean, there's morphine and painkillers, but suffering is something that we can work with sometimes. And so when there's unnecessary suffering, it just, it makes me sad about the state of the world and our relationship with dying, because a lot of the suffering near the end of life, I think, is in direct relationship with our resistance to death.
Yeah. That wording you used about carrying it around like a backpack or a good friend, I've just never heard anybody talk about it that way. I feel like most people, like you said, are just trying to push it away, push it to the back of their minds, and focus on what you need to do. And like, just don't think about it. Just don't think about death. You can't do anything about it, so just don't think about it.
Right.
As opposed to, just keep it with you. Be aware of it. There's nothing you can do about it, but there's a sort of freedom in accepting that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are there any like common misconceptions about the end of life kind of process, whether it's the legal process or the burial process or anything like that, that people should know more about? Because I know there's like natural burials out there, and there's cremation, and there's this, and no, anything that you could shed a light on that more people should know.
So many of them.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a big fat misconception. Because most of us don't know what dying itself looks like, because it's not happening at home anymore. It's just happening in hospitals.
Right.
So most of us have this image of it that is the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, it can be very sad, but it can also be so profound, you know, to be in the room when the light goes out is a really humbling experience. So not just sad, it can also be beautiful. Definitely things about planning for the end of life are there all types of misconceptions. Everybody thinks that they should have a will first and foremost, but yes, get a will, but also start to think about your practical things also.
Right.
Like, what about that t-shirt you wear all the time? Somebody's gonna care about that, but the will won't care. You know, think about the things that people in your life care about. Like, I wear these bracelets every day, right?
Yeah.
They have high sentimental value to the people in my life, but they're not worth junk. They are brass and copper and little bronze, like expensive. Right, yet these are the things that are going to cause my family a hard time because they're going to remind them of me. But if I get a will, it's going to cover my bank account and my car and my house, you know. Not that wills don't also cover those sentimental things, but sometimes it's really useful to get like realistic about your life and the imprint that you're going to leave when you die, so that you can help ease that.
Oh my gosh, I never thought about that.
I know.
So what would you do to prepare that? You'd write it all down, like, my bracelets go to, you know, this person? Or would you like gift them up and have them somehow sent out after you were gone? Like, how does that work?
I've written down, I have completed my own end of life planning, because I must. And in there it says that my bracelet should be distributed evenly amongst my sisters. And then I try to think of the sentimental things, but of course I don't know all the things that they're gonna want of mine. right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But so you've put in the time to think about it.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, my part of why I was asking about hospice is my mom died at home when I was a kid because she didn't want to die in a hospital. So we had hospice coming. And, after she died, like, we did the thing where we were divvying up her stuff, and like there was a shirt of hers that I had very specific memories of that I wanted, that once it came up and we found it, I mean, I was like 8, so my aunt, who was really, really close to my mom, like, my dad was kind of like, I think your aunt wants that, like, that's really important to her, which is, so having that experience, it never even occurred to me to go, oh yeah, you should like write down so and so gets my wrinkle in time inscribed copy that we read growing up, like things like that, like memories, because yeah, of course you're not going to put that in the practical stuff. And I've in sort of rare moments of like frustration with my mom, because she knew ahead of time, we had like a few months notice because she had cancer, I've had moments where I'm like, why didn't you like write us letters or something? Like, why didn't you like do, because she was just so creative and she loved to write. And I've always thought it was strange that she didn't do that. And I've always felt like, okay, when I get a moment to sit down and not panic about dying, I'm gonna make sure I do that. So the people I left have something that very clearly states like how I felt about them and can maybe offer like some closure, because just knowing that you're gonna go and having somebody like you there to go, hey, you should really think about these things because the people you love are gonna be thinking about them when you're not here anymore, is like, that's an amazing service that you're providing people. Because in those situations you're just so consumed with pain, you would never think about it.
Part of the benefit, I think a big part of the benefit of working with a death doula is that we do have a more holistic view on dying, right? So I can walk into somebody's house, see what it is that they care about, and make sure that that stuff is handled beforehand. And often when we're healthy, we say, oh, I don't care, I'll be dead. Like, it doesn't matter what you do for my funeral, I'll be dead. But it's like, if you don't care, somebody's going to have to at some point.
Right.
Somebody
right.
that you probably care about a lot, who's already going to be really hurting over the fact that you're dead. Like, do them a solid and just handle it now.
It's you caring about your loved ones.
Yeah,
truly. Even after you're gone,
Yeah, so if we don't want to prepare for death for ourselves, we can certainly do it for the people that we love. You know?
Wow. So are you able, I know that you don't share, you know, some of the beliefs and stuff, are you able to kind of tell us what your end of life plan would be for yourself, or at least maybe like what are step by steps that people listening to this could maybe start, besides of course calling you and hiring you? Is there stuff that they could be doing on their own right now to kind of prepare?
So start thinking about who you want to make your decisions for you in the event that you can't.
Okay.
If you're incapacitated or you're in a hospital someplace and somebody has to decide what type of medical treatment you're going to receive. Also, desires for life support, that's really, really important. Those are, those two things together are called an advanced directive, and you can find those online easily. But then beyond that, also start thinking of the kind of care you want to receive, at what point, you know, what condition of living is worse than dying, to create some framework around what type of treatment you want to have. Think about your funeral plans. What do you want done with your body, your possessions, your sentimental things? Do you have a storage unit someplace? Do you have a safe? Does anybody know how to open the safe except for you? Let's see, gather your important documents, like your social security card and your birth certificate, and make sure it's all in a place where somebody else knows where that stuff is. And something else I find very useful is what you mentioned earlier in writing down letters. There's just your ideas about life and death, and your ideas, like, what have you enjoyed while living? What can people use to remind them of you after your death? Those things I find really touching.
Is that something I would just write down on a piece of paper, just like an 8.5 by 11, just notepad? And that would be like a decent legal document if that was all that was found?
Good enough. It won't be legally binding.
Okay.
The only things that can be legally binding are your desires for life support and your healthcare decision making.
Okay.
When signed in the presence of two witnesses who are over the age of 18 and blah, 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 blah. But all the rest are not legally binding, but they
But somebody will find it.
And hopefully they will do their best to honor your wishes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Hopefully they give a shit.
Hopefully.
Jesus. There's a great exercise in the artist's way when you're talking about like writing letters for people. There's a great exercise that has you write a letter to yourself from the point of view of like an 80-year-old version of you, and write a letter to yourself from the point of view of like a 6-year-old version of you, and kind of like give yourself advice on where you're at. And that's, anytime I've done that, I've done that probably 2 or 3 times over the last decade, and writing that letter, especially from like 80-year-old you to your current self really does put things in perspective. Like, oh my God, like, why am I worrying so much about X, Y, and Z, these like tiny little things that really are not important.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to like scroll out in that way and not think about that. So
yeah.
That's another trick that I work with people on, is what I call the deathbed test. Very similar, not quite 80, but put yourself on your deathbed when trying to make major decisions.
Right.
Mm. On your death, like there's no more time left.
Yeah.
Will this decision you're about to make, will it matter at all?
Mm.
Will you be glad you did it? Will you be sad you didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Or it won't matter.
Right.
And if it won't matter, then shoot, go to the movie or don't.
Right.
Yeah. Break up with him or stay with him. Like, who cares?
You're talking about laying in your deathbed going, I never saw A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
I should have gone to that Tuesday matinee.
Yeah.
I'm not going to care.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to care.
Yeah. So as far as like the burial process and stuff, you help with that as well? Like, are you there? Like, if somebody wants a natural burial or something, are you helping like prepare the body and stuff like that? Or
that's some of the sweetest parts.
Really?
And I don't do it very often, but it's some of the sweetest parts.
Yeah.
Like washing a body after a death.
Wow.
Y'all, it is, it's so loving. It's like the final act of love. Think about this for a second. Somebody who's probably in their mid-70s but has been sick for a while and has been taken care of by the people that they love for a while at home. After they die, they've got nothing left to do but for care for this person that they loved so much in life one last time. It is so sweet.
Wow. I don't even know what to say right now, but that is... You just made my brain blow out my ears. Like, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Right.
I have such a fear of, like, I've never seen a corpse. Like, I have such a fear of all of that. So, like,
Let me tell you this. So, right after a death, we look kind of like we do right now.
Okay.
Like, things don't really start to change for maybe 6 hours or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then things really start to change.
6 hours, that fast.
Well,
really quick.
But subtle changes, right? Like we lose color and the eyes get a little flat. But other than that, you stay warm for a while too.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're washing a body, it's not like a rigid, like, corpse. It's just still a body.
Yeah.
A human body.
Yeah.
It's still movable and hair still and... You know, the reflexes aren't there, but it feels similar, like somebody who's deeply asleep.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, yeah. I sat with my mom after she died, but it was like in an hour, like probably within like an hour right afterward. And it was really weird because, yeah, you were kind of like, oh, you might just be sleeping. But her eyes were kind of half open and her mouth was open. So I remember trying to like close those so it looked normal, which is like, very morbid, you guys. Sorry,
no.
Trigger warning.
I'm just...
I remember thinking like, oh, if I could just get these to stay, it would just seem like she was still sleeping, which was so strange in that moment. So, but I, you know, I wasn't there because I was a little kid, but I wasn't there when they actually, like, you know, took her away or anything like that. So I've never been in that moment. But the way you're describing it is like, that's so poetic and gorgeous, like the way you just put it. Oh my gosh.
So
it can be.
Yeah, I remember I was listening to a podcast. I can't remember who it was or who to credit, but talking about like people's misconceptions about the burial process, how I don't know what the laws are and stuff like that, but a lot of the time you don't actually need a lot of like the coffin and the this and the that. Like, people can just be buried in the ground in some places. Is that true? Or
yeah, that's called a green burial.
Okay.
You have to do it in particular sites. Like, okay. In California or in Southern California, we have Joshua Tree, and I think also Forest Lawn has a green burial site. But you can be put in the ground in a shroud.
Yeah.
No more than 3.5-4 feet so that the bugs and everything can get to the body and it can decompose naturally. So that's available. There are, let's see, the family has the right to control the remains.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you can take care of your dead at home if you want to. You can have a home funeral. You can have a home wake. You can wash the body at home. You can lay the body out at home for as long as you want.
Whoa.
But
really?
After after a few days, people start to disengage and they're like, hold on a minute, this is not my mom anymore.
Yeah.
You know, she's not just sleeping. She's dead. And at that point, they get to the point where they can have the body removed, and then whatever's going to happen next. I just rocked your socks, didn't
I? did not know that.
This is all, like, blowing my mind. It's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't know you could keep them for as long as you want. I thought there was some sort of time, like, look, you got to let somebody in the government know within 2 hours.
Well, you have to report a death. You have to report the death.
Okay.
And the death has to be registered within 8 days, but you can keep the body at home.
Whoa,
in California.
8 days is so long.
Right? Plenty of time.
Yeah.
I mean, you should probably also call the doctors and the medical personnel at some point, but you don't have to call a funeral home immediately.
Yeah.
Like, the best thing to do after somebody dies is nothing at all.
Yeah.
Just wait. Just wait. There's no rush. Nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen for a while. So I think it's really important that people take their time after death to start to process the magnitude of what has just occurred and also get clear on what it is that they want to do next. Because from that moment, when the body leaves forward, it's just like a rush of stuff to do. There's just like so much stuff to do.
Yeah.
And people need a little bit of time to breathe.
Yeah.
So it's best to do nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy that we're just finding out about this type. Like, nobody talks about it. Like you said, nobody talks about it. And this is shit we need to know.
Right?
I mean, I had no idea. Like, you just assume, like, oh, there's got to be some laws and stuff about this. And because things are always like boom, boom, boom after a death. But are you finding that more people are caring for, you know, the body more on their own at home now? Have you seen, like, a spike in that? Or is it more, it's still, like, a lot of kind of traditional burial or whatever?
Yeah, it's still a lot of traditional, but the tide is turning.
Yeah.
You know, people are looking for other ways to do it. People are gaining greater relationships with dying.
Yeah.
People are wanting a new way of doing stuff. And realistically, the baby boomer generation, the biggest generation in all of history, is getting much older. And they traditionally have changed every single industry that they've ever been a part of. Like, they've done it their way. Mm. And a lot of times that means reclaiming. Like, they start to have babies at home. You know, they breastfeeding, they homeschooling, like, they started all these things that we see now, which is them doing it themselves. And I think that they're going to do the same thing with their deaths as well. They're all turning 65, 10,000 of them a day. And so in the next 15 years or so, we're going to be dying a little different. We've always known the old way, which is how their parents died.
Yeah.
And they're seeing that that doesn't really work.
Whoa.
And they're looking for other ways to do it. So it's going to shift.
Yeah. And hopefully a little later with the emergence of kale, right?
Yeah.
110?
Kale. So
anybody?
B12,
yeah.
Holy shit.
I'm, like, still stuck on, like, the bathing. How common is bathing somebody after they pass away? Because I didn't even know that.
Like, doing it yourself, you mean? Or, like, the family doing it?
Yeah. I've never heard of this at all.
It also exists in some faith traditions. Like the Jewish and Muslim.
Oh, okay.
It's in, I mean, written part of the doctrine about washing, bathing a body. How common is it? It'd be hard to give you a number or figure, but it's happening.
Oh, yeah. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
It's happening.
Is there, I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming it's just preference as far as what to do afterward, but is there anything that is widely considered, like, the most, I don't know, responsible or even, like, environmentally friendly thing to do after somebody dies? Like, is cremating the best? Is, you know, putting someone in a coffin the best? Is the natural burial, like you're saying, the best? Like, what would you say based on?
There's a number of good ones, better ones. But some of the worst ones are burial and cremation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Sadly, yeah. I mean, cremation releases so much CO2 into the air. Like, so much. I wish I knew the figure, but it's outrageous.
Really?
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about this.
I feel like a lot of people bring that up as like, maybe it's because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's quicker, and they think their body isn't taking up space in the land anymore. But to burn it, like to burn a body, you know, you need a lot of force. And so it releases a lot of CO2. And then burial also, like not only are we taking up a lot of land, we're using a lot of steel and wood and lacquer and whatever to get the bodies into the coffins, into the ground. And in the ground, there's concrete slabs on each side.
Yeah.
You guys know this. So when you open up the ground, you don't just put the coffin directly into the dirt. There's four concrete slabs on both sides. So the coffin goes into the concrete slabs, and then they put another one on top, and then they put the dirt on top of that.
Jeez. So can they not even be decayed? By
bingo.
Oh,
people aren't decaying naturally either because they're so insulated from the natural process. And it's so far down, it's so cold that the bugs don't get to do what they need to do either.
So what's happening? Are they just becoming skeletons, or just it's worse? It's just
it's much worse.
Dig one up and
I think they become like,
and it's just like rotting.
Yeah.
Oh, like, how
icky.
Whoa.
Like really icky.
So cremation, you know, coffin, traditional burial, I guess, the green burial. Are there other ones that people aren't aware of?
Aquamation is a new one. It's legal in about 16 states.
What is this?
It's water. Basically, water cremation.
Holy crap.
Where the body is placed in a vat of alkaline solution, and all the muscles, tissue, and fat dissolve. And what's left are the bones that are softened, and then they're ground up and given back to the family, kind of like you would remains for, like, cremation.
Wow. Why is it only legal in 16 states? Is it sort of controversial? Or?
I think it's kind of controversial. I think people are just trying to get used to the idea. And there's
is it
a
expensive?
Lot of, I don't think it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. Part of the challenge that it's having is people think that the water that remains is biohazard. But it's not, because it's totally alkaline, you know? Yeah. But I think that's a concern that people have. There's also a woman named Katrina Spade that's working on a project called Recompose. I think that's the name of the company. Or Recomposition. She's going to kill me. She's going to kill me. And then maybe she'll recompose my body.
Yeah. You can hire yourself.
Yeah. Right.
But she does, essentially, it's like urban cremation or repurposing bodies. So, turning bodies back into soil.
Oh my God, mom's a lamp. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Oh.
How do you like
more so like a tree?
Yeah, that is really cool.
Holy crap!
I cannot believe more people are not talking about this,
right?
This blows my freaking mind.
I can't believe how not anxious I feel. I really I was like nervous coming into this, going like, oh, this is gonna make me just drive so slow.
Right. Well, like you said, it's almost like we're all afraid of the unknown. But as even if you just know a little bit more about the process, about what you can do, or more burial options, I feel like it just kind of eases the tension a little bit. At least you can have some kind of an idea or game plan for while you're still here. Yeah. You might not know what happens after, but I just, like, I would have just never thought about this. Or, like, never probably did anything and just, like, I guess they'll have to figure it out. And, like, that's a shitty thing to do. But because it's, like, it's so scary to just kind of sit down and plan it, but you make it not scary.
Thank you. But I also find that, you know, most of the time people think that they're really, really scared of one thing. And then we sit and we start talking about it. And it's not like a big, scary, hard conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, these are just things I didn't consider. It's not like, I can't think about my death. But it's like, well, what about my password? Shoot. Who knows my password?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I didn't know it wasn't legally binding to just write something down and leave it in an envelope somewhere. Like, I mean, what's like the easiest way to write a will and have it be illegally binding? Like, can you like write something down and mail it to yourself or something? And just,
that's a good question.
Is that good enough? I'm just trying to figure out how I can do this without sitting down with some sort of lawyer.
Right.
Or notary.
You know, the thing is, okay, big picture, There are rules already in place about who inherits who if you don't have a will. It's called intestacy. So the court will say very clearly who's going to get your stuff if you don't ever say. No. And so if you create a will that isn't legally binding, your stuff isn't just going to revert to the state or something. It will go to your family members, and it's based on blood and marriage relationships, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're married, your spouse will inherit you first, and then if you're not, your parents, and then your children, or your children, and then your parents, and then your siblings your grandchildren. And so there's already a system in place. But if you want to, if you're gonna even tread in the will territory, just do it right.
Yeah,
you can do one on the internet. They're cheaper. But you could get, you could create unintended consequences by not doing it the right way. You know what I mean?
Like what do you mean?
Like you end up gifting something to somebody that ends up costing them a whole bunch of money to inherit rather than having done it another way that would have been free for them or something.
What's an example of that?
Oh gosh.
Like you can't just like give someone your car?
No, they'd have to pay taxes on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Stuff like that.
Gotcha.
I mean, whereas if you could create a trust, for example, a living trust that is a different type of document that doesn't transfer all your assets upon death, but transfers them while you're living, or transfers them into the name of the trust so that you can still manage what's happening to them, but you don't just give it to somebody when you die.
Yeah.
If you have questions about like how to create any of these documents, just see a lawyer. There's some not too expensive ones, still very good ones.
Because is that part of your making an end of life plan is getting a will in place?
Or? I don't do wills.
You don't do wills?
No, I find them so boring. Love y'all. I quit the practice of law. Remember that? We started there.
I was curious though because of your background. If you're like,
she just does all the fun stuff to give them the baths and things.
And there are plenty of estate lawyers out there that love it and are really, really good at it. And so what I do mostly is talk to people about what their things are and their ideas about who's going to get it and say, you should probably find a lawyer.
Right.
Yeah.
But you do help kind of get that conversation going so they know what they want to put in the will that they can do with someone else.
Okay. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Right.
Go to somebody else.
So like, can somebody like me hire you right now to like help with hopefully very far down the line, you know, that I'll live to a good old age and everything, you know?
Yeah.
But does somebody have to be dying or terminally ill to hire you?
No.
Or it can be like anything. Just like, hey, I'm thinking about it. What do I do?
I work with a lot of healthy people
okay,
to create an end-of-life plan. I mean, because realistically, this document also helps with life. Like, I reference mine constantly to try to remember what my passwords are because I don't have LastPass or any of those. Like, legit.
Pulling out a folder that just has, like, a skull on it. Just how do I get into Facebook?
Just like that.
Oh my God.
It's actually much cuter than that. But yeah, it's just a document that has, you know, all the things that we talked about previously.
Right.
Like, did you make it cute?
It's cute. It's got forget-me-nots on it.
It's
a document that I made that I use in my consultation. So it's got forget-me-nots. It's got my symbol in purple. It's cute.
Can you find that on your website? I'm telling you.
Can you find that on your website or anything?
No, I don't sell that on its own because it's really useful in conjunction. Because then I can ask you the questions to make sure that we've got the things that we need to get. But I work with a lot of healthy people. I find that a lot of people in their like 30s and 40s are like, yo, what now? Our parents are getting older. We're seeing them. We've seen some of them die. We've seen like how the system goes and we're like, that doesn't work for me, or I want to protect people in the event of this, or I just had kids and I'm trying to figure out how to make sure that everything's safe for them, or I want to make sure that my spouse is the one who can make all my decisions for me and that he's fully aware of what my desires are for after I die.
I have a question. If people don't believe in marriage, and they have some, you know, very long relationship, a life partner, is there, I mean, I'm assuming in a will, could you give that person like all of the rights that like a spouse would have naturally if they died? Could you just be like, this person should be considered my spouse even though we didn't technically get the piece of paper or whatever?
The best way to do that would be a medical power of attorney, somebody who can make your decisions for you in the event that you can't, mm-hmm. when you're incapacitated. And that would confer that person the right to do all those things anyway. Mm-hmm. As it relates to everything else, it's so tricky.
Yeah.
It's so tricky because you can select somebody to run your funeral and the person who's in charge of disposing of your body after your death, but that's not always honored. Mm. And it's a gray area about whether or not it's actually legal in some places. And so I find this a lot, like in the trans community, somebody has a gender identity, yet their family wants them buried in the one that they were born in. And their partner is just like, what now? Like massive conflict. And so it's important to address these things beforehand and like get really clear about what you want.
That's so tough.
Right.
Yeah, because I feel like that's the biggest argument for even still, like, because a lot of people are just like, yeah, what's the point of even getting married now? And, like, the one thing everybody goes back to, like, I have friends who have been like, I don't really want to get married. And then, like, something happens to their partner where they have to go to the hospital or something. And they're like, well, yeah, we're just going to do it. We're just going to get married so that there's not an issue if something horrible happens. You know?
It helps.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to think it helps other things, too, but it's certainly.
Right. How do you feel about stuff? Like, I'm sure a lot of people, you've seen them just left with a ton of shit that they have to figure out donating and weeding through. And there's something called Swedish death cleansing that like you're trying to get rid of things, you know, so people aren't left with it. Do you yourself keep that in mind, like, as you're going through life? Like, are you a minimalist? I'm saying this as a minimalist, but I don't know. Like, how do you feel about that whole part of it? Should people be thinking about that a lot sooner? Mm.
Or do you want to be buried in a pyramid with all of your worldly
things? Drape me in my jewels. I have a lot of jewelry.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of clothes and I have a lot of shoes.
Yeah.
I also have a lot of books.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. But the thing is, it's going to be fun after I die because they can just go through them and go wild. Right.
Yeah.
I also want to decorate my funeral with my jewelry. I want it to be hanging up and I want people to put it on and then they can take what they want home.
That is so cool.
Not bad, right?
You're like an estate funeral.
Exactly.
Oh,
come get the goods.
Idea.
Come get the goods.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you ever advise anybody to, like, hey, when you're pushing a certain age, maybe start dwindling down on your possessions, or no, it can be taken care of, no problem afterward?
Both.
Yeah.
Right? Like, life is short, buy loose shoes, and somebody's going to have to deal with this after you die.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I often, when I'm buying something, I'm like, ooh, at some point, this has got to go.
Yeah.
Either
yeah.
I'm going to donate it, or somebody's going to have to deal with it after I die. So how important is this really? Like, I just went to Target.
Target's a trap.
Trap.
I would actually like to be buried in Target.
In the sign?
Yes.
Just open that little middle circle and just pop you right in there.
Perfect.
Curl you up.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm realizing, talking about this, that I actually think about death so often, but not necessarily my own, but I think about my mom's, who is alive, but two of my best friends both lost their moms to cancer about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And then Taylor and I became close friends about 2 years ago. And I'm like, I've watched these people in my life lose their mom, and I'm very, very close with mine. And seeing that made me, it's almost put this like intense daily pressure on my relationship with my mom, because I'm trying to be so grateful with her like every day, and it's almost put like an unbearable amount of like pressure and perfectionism on my relationship with her, because if she and I like disagree about something and get into like a little argument afterward, I feel so horrible, because I almost feel like there's no room for me to have like a bad day with her, which in a way almost makes like more bad days, because like, of course, how are you can't live like that. You can't be like, our relationship has to be perfect, because I'm so aware that like I'm gonna lose you at some point, and I don't know how to stop doing that. It's probably something I need to talk about in therapy, but like talking about this here today, it's really like, wow, I do this so much thinking about it. It's really hard.
One thing that I find that can be useful, or that people are doing near the end of life, is we do think a lot about our relationships, right? But it's less about how perfect they were, but like how hard we loved.
Yeah.
Did I love hard? Did I like give this my best go? Was I always right for her? Did I never rock the boat? But how much grace did I apply to my humanness?
Yeah.
How much grace was there in the relationship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because then I can feel okay about the choices that I made that might make our relationship difficult at times if I was authentic in my decision making and in my communication and whatever else, rather than just being like, it's fine, it's good, I love you, you might die tomorrow.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just like beating myself up almost on a daily basis. She just moved down a couple months ago from Washington State to live like 10 minutes away from me. So I'm interacting with her much more often than I was. And it's like, it's giving more opportunities for like that pressure to be there. And if it doesn't go like great in a conversation, I just am like beating myself up for hours afterward, like, why did I like snap at her? Like, she's, you know, she's going through a hard time. I just need to be totally understanding and not get frustrated. And like, I feel so bad, but it's like a pattern that keeps happening. And I don't know.
Grace, girl, grace.
Yeah.
A lot of grace.
Yeah.
Permission to be super fucking human.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Lots of permission to be human. Like, that's one of the things that I try to remind myself of all the time. And it's hard not to when, you know, you're seeing bodies decay and decline. You're like, yo, we are human. Like, it's so fragile, this body of mine.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm actually very, very human, which means messy all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it's been tough for me because I also really like to do things right.
Yeah.
No.
Ain't not a bitch.
Fucking up constantly.
That's what our show's about. How have we fucked up this week? There we go. Here's a laundry list. Oh my gosh.
So do you feel like you have your priorities super in order because you're always thinking about this stuff?
No.
That's the sense I'm getting from you. You seem very together and centered and like...
No. No, I cried because I thought my elbows were fat like 2 days ago. I swear. Look at this one. It's chunky. That sounds centered and together to you? Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Oh my God.
Well, that's the clip of the week.
Oh, man, yeah.
That was amazing.
Good shit.
Yeah.
What is, like you said, is serving people, is that like your main priority that you keep coming back to when you think of like, okay, I'm going to die one day. What's up first? What's like the first thing? Your job.
The first thing is everybody's going to die and we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That's my thing.
Yeah.
It's my everything. Like,
it's your calling.
How can I support people in getting closer relationship with their dying?
Yeah.
That's it. All day, every day.
Yeah.
Just constantly running back there.
Do you feel like people who are dying really, I would imagine they really appreciate having somebody speak to them so frankly about what's going on? Because I can't imagine that the people around somebody who that's happening to always know what to say or how to handle it. I think it says something to that effect on your website, which I looked at before we came in here. And I can't imagine. I mean, I can only imagine how grateful somebody who is in a terminally ill situation feels having somebody like you come in and go like, this is totally normal and we're just going to talk about what needs to happen now, because this is happening, as opposed to maybe family members of theirs where they're like, you're going to beat this, we're just not going to accept this.
Exactly. It makes a big difference, because more often than not, the dying person knows that they're dying, yet is trying to like keep fighting for everybody else. But they know what's going down. Maybe the doctors haven't said, but they know what's happening.
Really?
And sometimes it's useful just have somebody be like, hey, so do you want to talk about what's going on?
Yeah.
Or how do you feel about your treatment? Or what about your surgery that's coming up in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
They probably, it feels so like seen by you. When everybody else is trying to avoid it or not, you know, deal with it.
We pussyfoot around death so much.
Yeah.
Just all the time. And it doesn't help, I don't think. It doesn't help. You know, once I was with a family and it was the sister or somebody that called me. She said, okay, but we can't tell him, her brother. We cannot tell him that you're a death doula. So we have to come up with something else to call you. And so we decided I was going to be like a special illness specialist or something like that.
Yeah.
Difficult. I can't even remember what some bullshit.
Yeah.
So then I go in, you know, I talk to the guy. At some point he asked her if everybody can leave so we can have a real conversation. He said, listen, I think I'm dying, but just don't tell them. And I was like,
whoa.
What now? Wow. What now? Oh, what now?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yes. That was a don't tell on both sides of the spectrum there.
So what did you do? What do you do in that situation? I mean, do you just go back to them and be like, he says he feels great.
He says more lotion.
Yeah.
I just encouraged him to speak frankly with them.
Yeah.
There's space for reconciliation and healing, although healing is a funny word when talking about the death context, but like emotionally, right? There's a lot of space for healing as long as we're open and frank.
Yeah.
And honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that got everybody on the same page so they could figure out what to do next and like how to carry out the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. This has been so amazing.
Yeah.
You are truly a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for coming and doing this.
Favorite episodes ever.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Incredible.
Is there anything else that you want people to know who might be listening? Anything about life or death or just anything?
And where can they find you?
Yes, obviously.
Yes. One thing that I'm finding a lot lately is people are wanting to learn how to do this themselves, not only because they want to do it professionally, but also because they recognize that people in their lives are going to die and be useful to have some knowledge about how to do it. Even though we all have the knowledge anyway, just learn some skills and figure out how to like contact Social Security. But I do have a training program right now.
So if people are curious,
yeah, get in touch and I'll get you an application. Then you can sign up.
Okay, so where can they get in touch with you?
Site and everything.
Sure, my website, www.goingwithgrace.com. Mm-hmm. Also on Instagram by the same name, but you have to add underscores, otherwise it's like a yellow lab someplace.
Of course. With Grace, and like, this is Grace. Yeah. He can fetch.
Can you also tell us what is like your favorite book about death? Because you said at one point you were just like so like hungry for knowledge and you just read a bunch of books. And I wonder, we do like book reviews on here. Yeah. A lot of the time, and I just wondered if there is a book that you really recommended for people to kind of like jump into if they wanted to learn more.
One of them is pretty dense, but it's called Die Wise by Stephen Jenkinson. It's dense, but he just blows my mind left and right. Like, that guy has a way with words and a way about thinking about human that is incredible.
Whoa.
Love that one.
Cool.
I also really love It's Okay to Die by Monica Williams Murphy. She's an ER doctor, and so she sees that side of death.
Yeah.
And that's a fascinating read. I also really like A Year of Magical Thinking.
Oh.
I think it's Joan Didion. Yeah. About grief.
I haven't read that yet.
It's really good. Yeah. It's really good.
Awesome.
Those are my three biggies.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
This is very obviously your calling. So thank you for being here and sharing with this. And I feel like it probably gives you such a tremendous amount of purpose doing this for a career. So
you're like an angel.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You're with a bit on my elbow.
I know. Well, an angel with weird self-esteem stuff. That's all.
A real angel. I have a question. Have you ever gotten really close with somebody during this process and then they die and then it's really tough
all the
for
time.
You?
Every single time. Even if it's just a few weeks or a few hours of a conversation, because all of a sudden I'm like digging into their life, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And then I'm like, they're going to die, Eloa.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. So like grieving is a part of your job a lot.
Majorly.
Yeah.
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 Shit.
Oh my God.
You are an angel. My God.
You're incredible.
I just feel my emotions.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We'll send all our listeners your way and we'll tag you and everything so they can find you really easily.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Love you.
Love you guys.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Oh, we love you guys so much. To continue to support Self Helpless Podcast, go to selfhelplesspodcast.com for anything and everything you could want. We have our links to Patreon, merch, our individual websites, our Facebook group, Amazon link, full episodes, also our contact for our P.O. box and email. And you can follow Self Helpless Podcast on Instagram, as well as us individually. I am at T-Tom Comedy or Taylor Tomlinson, depending on if you're on Instagram or Twitter, ttomcomedy.com.
And I'm at Kelsey Cook Comedy on Instagram, at Kelsey Cook on Twitter, and kelseycook.com for tour dates.
And I'm at Delaney Fisher on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and at Dicks by Delaney for some good old-fashioned dick stuff on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Perfect. And you can also follow Self Helpless on Facebook.
Great.
Thanks, guys.
Yay, we love you. Why won't it let